thirdsunday.com, the 10th Sunday in Ordinary Time, Cycle A, Making Friends. As he walked down the hall, Hank avoided eye contact with the other students at Elmer Elementary. This was his first day at his new school. What would these kids think of him? Hank glanced at his shoes. Were they stylish enough? He raised his head to stop by his classroom. He made eye contact with a cute girl. Hi, she said. Hank froze. What do I do now, he thought. Hi, he responded. Some children are outgoing, while others are shy. Some make friends easily, while others find it difficult to make friends. When she was a child and as a teen, my wife made friends with ease, while I was too shy in my younger days to reach out to others. Most of us lie in between extrovert and introvert. According to the scriptures, however, Jesus was definitely an extrovert. He was a charismatic figure who constantly reached out to people and attracted followers. Even non-Christians, agnostics, and atheists would have to admit Jesus was a natural-born leader. Jesus made many, many friends in his lifetime. The question Matthew's gospel presents to us is why? Why did Jesus go out and make friends throughout the countryside? Why did he make an ever-widening circle of friends the core of his ministry? He approached people, made friends with them, and called them into discipleship simply to put them into a relationship with God. That overriding mission trumped social status and place, even ethnic background and political allegiance. People's priorities were not God's priorities. It didn't matter where the person came from. Jesus was concerned where he or she was going. He wanted that person to come with him. His call to the individual was simple. Follow me. Of course, such a disregard for the pecking order of society would have repercussions. The attitude of Jesus would cause scandal. That's what the narrative from the Sunday's Gospel is all about. Jesus called a tax collector, Matthew by name, and Matthew responded. Jesus wanted someone who extorted taxes from the local populace for a foreign despot as a follower. Tongues began to wag. How dare the rabbi invite Matthew, a blood-sucking, Caesar-worshipping, traitor scum, to become a disciple? The fact that Matthew immediately left his workplace to follow Jesus was immaterial. The holy man from Nazareth associated himself with tax collectors, outcasts, and sinners. In fact, he shared his presence with these outsiders in the most intimate of social settings. He ate with them. To appreciate the scandal Jesus caused among his contemporaries, consider what a meal meant to Jews in Palestine of 1st century AD. When a family gathered for a meal, there was a certain seating order that defined the importance of the person within the family. The closer to the patriarch of the family one sat, the more important that person was to the family. When the leaders of different families gathered for a meal, they would make political deals and economic arrangements. And the rules were the same. The host usually was the power broker in the group. The seating arrangement of the group determined the political and economic clout of the meal members. Most important in these meals, commitments were made. If a Jew ate with someone, he was implicitly or explicitly committed to that person. Now the full weight of the scandal comes clear. Jesus made a commitment to sinners. Why did he throw in his lot with these people? His response was not only an answer, but a challenge to those who objected. Learn what God meant when he spoke to the prophet Hosea. I want mercy, not ritual sacrifice. In other words, people, despite their ethics or standing within the community, are more important than mere worship of God. Compassion trumps ritual purity or cultic practice. The basis for the commitment Jesus showed and demands from us is trust. He trusted Matthew and his fellow sinners to become worthy disciples. He expects that trust to be returned in kind. Trust is at the core of St. Paul's teaching to the Romans about justification. How do we know we stand justified in his presence? How do we know we're right with God? Paul used the patriarch Abraham to make his point. Despite his old age and that of his wife, Abraham trusted God. would somehow, someway keep his promise. Abraham believed that he would be the father of a nation that would live in the land of Cana. His trust, not blind worship, not right social circles, or faith in himself being a good person, justified his place before the Almighty. Paul challenges us to do the same. Trust in God and in his Son Jesus. In this way, we will see that we, like Abraham, are right with God. Some of us make friends easily, while others find friend-making a chore. But when we make good friends, we develop a trust relationship with them. We depend upon them, and we hope they can depend upon us. This is no less important in our relationship with God. God wants us to be more than his servants. He wants us to be as his friends. He wants us to place our total trust in him. When we believe in him without reservation, then we will see our future with him. How can you become a closer friend with God? This presentation was written, narrated, and produced by Larry Broding. Copyright 2008, all rights reserved. Thank you for listening.